Hello and welcome to another episode of Chasing Excellence. My name is Patrick Cummings, and as always, I'm here with Ben Bergeron. Every week on the show, we dedicate some time to exploring how we can live a life of better health and increased fulfillment. We answer your questions about the five factors of health, dive deep on living a life of excellence, and explore the strategies and frameworks to help us chase what truly matters. Thank you so much for joining us. How the heck are you, Ben?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Patrick.
Let's get back into it. Woo. We've got this week, we've got listener questions about F45 versus CrossFit, eating white rice, Wim Hof breathing, and leadership. Our workout this week is going to be a conversation about trusting the process, and our cool down to wrap up the show is going to be a quick chat about some recent criticism from a listener that I wanted to get your thoughts on.
Cool.
First thing first, our warm up. We start each episode with listener questions about the five factors of health, those few fundamental behaviors that most positively affect our performance, vitality, and longevity. For those folks who might be new, those five factors are how we eat, how we move, how we think, how we connect, and how we recover. Are you ready, sir?
Let's do it.
Move category first. This question is from Mitch. I used to go to a CrossFit box, but recently moved and so joined at an F45 that is closer to my place. I'm wondering your thoughts on F45 versus CrossFit. So far, I find that F45 is not as measurable, and because of this, I can't push myself to the extent that I did at CrossFit, but curious your thoughts.
Yeah.
And how well known is F45?
I think it's...
Do we have to explain it, I guess, is the better question.
Well, if we have to explain it, we're going to come up short. As a concept, yeah. As a thing, I think it's fairly well known. There's CrossFit, there's Orange Theory, and there's F45. My limited understanding, because yes. It's just that. It's probably about the same as my limited understanding of Orange Theory.
Yes.
But I believe that it's CrossFit-esque,
yep.
Done within 45-minute
yep.
sessions.
I think that's the 45, okay. Yeah.
So I don't know much of it beyond that, except for what the listener has asked, which leads me to a really key understanding and differentiation, yep. Which is the lack of measurability of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we can identify what CrossFit is, and then you can draw the parallels and the differentiation between the two. CrossFit is what people will define CrossFit as, is constantly varied functional movements performed at high intensity. That's probably also what F45 is, to a degree. Mm-hmm. I would say it the way that most of these people, when they're doing this and they're trying to do it close to it, they do mixed modal, right? So they're doing like Barry's Bootcamp does this, right? Where they do running and some weightlifting or body weight. Okay, we're in the neighborhood. Orange Theory does the same. And I think that Orange Theory does this in a more measurable way, which is the second part. Like, CrossFit is not just constantly varied functional movements at relatively high intensity. It is that with measurable, observable, and repeatable data.
Mm-hmm.
That's now, once you put that second part on it, we're doing science. Mm-hmm. It's different than doing exercise, because it is... We could literally say how effective was your workout, not how heavy was I breathing, yeah. How sweaty was it? Oh my gosh.
Like, what was your
that
heart
was
rate?
So fun. That coach was so engaging, like a spin class, right? What was my heart rate? Oh, that's measurable. But no, truly, he or she who expresses the greatest amount of average power over a certain time domain is the person that is working the hardest. Now, you can take that from person to person to workout program to workout program. Now, the moment it's no longer measurable, it loses that capacity. And now, just to put what actually do we mean by this,
mm-hmm.
is think of something like hang power cleans. Okay, so you're starting from your thighs, the barbell at your thighs, to your shoulders in a full standing position. You can measure how far that bar moves from point A to point B. You can measure how long you're doing it for,
mm-hmm.
and you can measure how many reps you were able to get in that time domain, which
and
means-
you didn't say it, the weight that you-
And the weight, sorry. So, right, so maybe I messed that up, but it's the weight,
yep.
it's the load, which is the weight. This is old school physics, right? It's force times distance divided by time. Measurable, you know how the weight, you know the distance, you know how long it took you to get there, plus what always missing this and people try to extrapolate this, is how many reps. Mm-hmm. That's not what's not in that formula. But you times the top one, force times distance times reps, that's your total work. Work divided by time is power. Okay, so we can measure that. How far did the bar travel? Yep. What was the weight and so on? If we contrast that to something that's cool, exciting, fun to do and look at, like battle ropes, it falls apart. This is why battle ropes is not a part of our program. It's literally the reason, is because when you do a battle rope, well, how are you measuring the power output of that? How far is it moving? Like how much weight are you resisting against? Like, it's not that these movements are just like the movements for the movements. They truly are selected based off their unique ability to express power. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the first part. The second part is when you do that, you recognize that movements that are massively, Heather started listening to our podcast and she's like, you say massive a lot. So now it's going to be my word that I realize I say a lot, but they get,
thanks, Heather.
Yeah, extremely compounded. Now I'm just going to do workarounds, right? When you use the multiple joint thing. So think of something like a thruster, right? Where you're using all of your leg muscles, you're driving up through your core to using almost all of your arm muscles, like an amazing movement. As opposed to something like, let's do some wall sits, cool for boot camp, not really expressive power, not a big, and let's do some like, planks. Right? It's just not the same. You're not, and the shortcut to this is the more you use your hips, the better it is. So I'm getting kind of down a rabbit hole to the differentiation, but that's the answer. Yep. Is why are you feeling like you're not pushing? It's because it's not measurable. And when it's not measurable, the greatest motivator in the world is a stopwatch and a whiteboard. Mm-hmm. Like, here's how long it took you, post your times, your scores up there. When you do that, there is nothing else that will motivate them. This has been done. No drill sergeant, no prize at the end. Like, it's all about just where we are. Hierarchical beings. It's built into our DNA on a biological level. We want to know where we rank in the tribe. The scoreboard allows you to do that. Now, for it to be a scoreboard, it has to be measurable. And if we're doing hip thrusts, just lie on the ground and glute bridges, like, okay, like there goes the measurability. Like, no one talked about what the range of motion is. Mm-hmm. We need that for the efficacy of the program.
I have the F45 website up and I keep trying to find like the one sentence of like what it is, but I kind of can't. But
what's the closest thing you got?
F45 Training is a global fitness community specializing in innovative, high intensity group workouts that are fast, fun, and results driven.
It's the same thing that everybody says.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm sure that's
not to knock on it because it's way better than it's way better than probably 85-90% of the other so-called fitness trends, right? They're really close, but the magic is in the details, right?
It might be fun for us because admittedly, we're both kind of like, I know what F45 is, but that's about it. It might be fun for us in a future episode to like, let's talk about F45 Orange Theory. Let's break these apart a little bit. And
one of my Maya, my daughter, 22 years old, is on college lacrosse team, Division I lacrosse team. They're doing phenomenal. Yeah. They've only lost to the number 3 team in the country right now. So exciting. Yay, yeah. Go Maya.
Yeah.
One of the dads owned 6 F45s, mm-hmm. and we hung out and had dinner with it. So we got to go back and forth a little bit about it, but we didn't do the deep dive.
Yeah, it'd just be interesting because it'd be a good excuse for us to, like, I know what Orange Theory is, sort of.
It's where I am.
Right? And it might be fun for us to just give us an excuse to dive in a little bit, so I'll make a note of that. All right, cool. Think category, and this is from Pat Padrig, which I think is like the Irish Patrick, so I should know that for sure. But I think that's how you pronounce that.
You should do this whole in an Irish accent.
Yeah, I will spare people that. I have been doing CrossFit for 6 years while also embarking on my mental health journey. I have become aware in recent years that a lot of what motivated me initially in my training, and he says joining a quote unquote elite social group, external praise, being fitter than others, was fueled by low self-esteem and trauma from my youth at not being accepted and including in athletic circles. This fuel initially served me well as I progressed quickly and my ego was stroked by being competent at technical skills and finishing first on the floor in workouts. This eventually brought me down a path of injury and being emotionally unregulated if I didn't perform to a certain internal standard that I held. My question is, how do you support athletes when you have identified the landscape of their training motivation is in flux in cases like these?
Patrick. Phenomenal question, because a great question. I do believe you've answered your question yourself. I can do it.
Like, that's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm more. Will eventually end up in like an Indian accent without noticing.
I was thinking like more like leprechaun. I'm just like, I'm a
It'll become a parody of an Irish accent. Yeah. Yes.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
This is awesome, right? Like, got into this thing to stroke my ego, but over the last 6 years, recognize the mental development and practice that comes along with the physicality of this. And Patrick, if the question is, where do I go from here? You're doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is it. Like, you've recognized.
That's the awareness. Yep.
Exactly right. So now what we need to do, if I could give any sort of icing for the cake you've already baked, it's so cool, right? Like, how aware, like, man, the reason I was doing this was to stroke my ego. I felt good about being in this elite group and better than other people. But now I'm recognizing how this might not be serving me to my bigger areas. It's like, it's making me feel good. By the way, ego is just the thing inside of you that says like, I'm important.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's like when you're everyone has it. And it's good that you have it. Like, that's the reason you want to accomplish certain things but you can't, when it's no longer serving you in the path of ultimate health, wellness, fitness,
satisfaction,
all those things that we talk about all the time, then we have to recognize that it's hurting us,
mm-hmm.
or at least holding us back. And he's there. It's completely there. So if there is something to bolt onto this, it's trying as often as we can to pull back to the greater perspective of what the ultimate chase is.
Mm-hmm.
And someone like Patrick is ready for that conversation with themselves. In the beginning, it's kind of like Chasing Excellence 1.0. It's like, show up to the gym 6 days a week and work your ass off. That gets you in the door so we can have this conversation. And sometimes it takes 6 years and sometimes it takes 6 weeks, but most people, myself included, aren't ready for that higher level conversation on day one. Patrick certainly is. And the conversation's with yourself, which is, I'm doing this for what purpose?
Mm-hmm.
And not in like a coy, like, what's the point of this at all? It's truly like, if I'm going to the gym to bust my ass every day, why? And I'm finding myself hurt and I'm finding myself beating myself up when I don't finish on the top of the leaderboard. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And just having that level of curiosity is the thing that we want to bring to the table, along with the determination, the tenacity, the fortitude, the mental resilience, the discipline. It's not just those things. It's also, where do those things sit in the perspective of the total pursuit? Because those things, for our type of people, can steer us in the wrong direction at times, right? Where it's like, I got to go to the gym and I have to PR and I have to qualify for quarters. And if I don't, something's wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, for most of the people that are listening to this, that's usually not the ultimate chase. The ultimate chase is, you know, I'm going to put words in people's mouths in a language, but it's just my own. And I'm just going to give mine as a, people can latch on and go, no, that's not quite me. Mine's more steered this way. Yes, I want a certain level of achievement. I want to build and create things. That has not gone away whatsoever. But I don't want to do that at all costs. I want to do that in line with a bigger objective, which is to, and I know where that fits in. At least I have an understanding of where that fits in terms of the totality of the build. The build is not me and my athletic pursuits, me and my business pursuits, me and where I fit in the social media landscape, me where I fit in terms of influencer. It's me where I those things, but with 5, 6, or 7 other things. Me with my relationship with my parents, me with my relationship with my wife, me with my kids, me with my ability to remain calm and centered throughout this entirety of this. It's not, the big thing is not at all costs, because when it's at all costs, we end up derailed from the actual pursuit, which is where I think Patrick's finding himself.
Love that. And such a great question. And
great, just, such a great, right?
You just walk through, without saying it, you just walk through the awareness, intention, and action to a degree. We didn't dive on the action because the awareness and the intention really are the most, and he's going to have to figure out what the action looks like. Yeah. But to me, that like just reminding ourselves continuously coming back to, okay, cool, you've got the awareness. And now with that awareness, let's figure out what the intention should be, right, which is kind of what you just unpacked. And then depending on what that intention is,
yeah,
like, that determines the action.
It's so easy for me to get caught in this too. Like when I come to the gym, it's like I'm a human being that's been doing CrossFit for 15 years. I obviously love it. And there's an aspect of like, I want to be better than other people.
Yeah.
It's like, 100%. It's there.
Yep.
But I also have to know that like that aspect is so much smaller than the bigger aspect, which is I want to kick ass in my 90s and be a benefit, not a burden to my family. I don't want to get injured, and I want to keep doing this because if I get injured and I can't do this for the next 20 days, I know what that does to my mental state and everything else. So that I want to be better than everybody else is there, but it's not 2 or 3 notches down below.
It's not the only thing at the table.
It's not the only thing. It's not the biggest
plate.
It's an appetizer.
Yeah.
It's a side card drink, right? It's like a little thing that's there, but it's not going to get the full attention.
Love that. Okay, cool. We've got 3 more of your questions, but first we want to do a quick shout out, a quick thank you to one of our sponsors this week, Blinkist. Blinkist is an app. They have a summary of over 5,500 nonfiction books. They've also got, so you can read it or you can listen to it. And they've got books across every single category that you can imagine. So I thought it'd just be fun quickly to talk about some of the books that we feel like folks should check out on Blinkist.
Yeah. First off, Blinkist is really cool. It's like getting someone's study notes.
Yeah.
Right. So a great one, I think, for our people would be, Matt Walker's Why We Sleep.
Mm, yep.
Like it's a 300 page book that, you know, like I love Matt Walker, all the things, but you need the actionables out of it. So it's a great way to get that.
Yep. I was thinking about which ones I would recommend, and I always almost immediately go to Seth Godin. So I was like, cool, let me look at which ones Seth Godin has. And so they've got most, if not all of them, but Icarus Deception, The Practice, and Linchpin are 3 that if you want to dive into Seth
Godin. I would also add in Deep Work by Cal Newport.
100%.
Because
Digital Minimalism too.
You can just get all like the, okay, like I want to learn how to do deep work. It's not, you don't necessarily need all the background behind it. Here's the actionables to how to do it.
100%. Cool. So right now Blinkist has a special offer for us. If you go to Blinkist.com/excellence to start your 7-day free trial, you'll get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. And for a limited time, you can use what they call Blinkist Connect, which is their or your ability to share your premium account with somebody else, basically giving you 2 premium subscriptions for the price of 1. Again, BLINKIST.com/excellence to get 25% off and 7-day free trial. Let's dive into our eat category. This is from Cassandra, or Cassandra, I guess, depending on where you're from. What are your thoughts on eating white rice every day? I'm a very active mother and CrossFitter, and it's just convenient to whip up with lunch during the week.
Yeah, it's 85-90% of nutrition questions are going to be,
it depends.
Right. And it depends because of 2 factors.
What your goals are.
And I was going to go EC, like dose.
Oh, go for it.
Dose.
Oh, and yeah. Context, no, go EC.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's really where it is. But
context, I would say, is in that.
You're probably better with like that. Yeah. So where we always start with is what's your goals? Yep. So yes, it depends. Dose, context, goals. Cassandra, it's okay.
Right. At the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's honestly going to be the answer. Now, if you tell me that, like my wife, Heather, who grew up with a Filipino mother who literally every single morning for breakfast had a pot of white rice on the stove, like And it was, that was a part of like, and you just ate it throughout the day, like yep. every day.
It was just always there.
It was always there. Yep. So it's a part of her, it's just a part of her, honestly. It's like, it's just like,
and she's half rice at this
point. Yeah. So, but what she's found over the last few months is rice upsets her stomach.
Ooh.
Right. Yeah. So the weird, so that's why it always depends. Yeah. So even if this person that is like, you're very active, you do CrossFit, active mom, it's super easy. She could, the answer is yes, but dot, 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 does it agree with you? Have you tried removing it and re-putting it back in? Mm-hmm. That would always be my suggestion, especially if you're like questioning this thing. But if you're asking me if it's okay, can it be a part of a healthy diet? The answer is yes. If you're asking me, do I recommend it for every single person? The answer would be no. And that is because it is very easy source to get extremely high amounts of carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that thing of, you know, the extreme is this is like processed food versus like apple juice versus an apple. Yeah. Well, it's not apple juice. It's because there's not a lot of bad stuff in it. But it's essentially, if you think of what rice is, it's essentially basically like pure glucose. Mm-hmm. For an active person that needs to get the carbs in, phenomenal source. Almost every one of our elite athletes has a lot of rice in their diet because they need to get it in. It's a really good, clean source of that. If you're 50 pounds overweight and you already have a lot of processed foods in your diet, adding this into a meal would not be a part of the recommendation I would go towards. So maybe a little bit more information than we need for Cassandra, but Cassandra. But that would be my take on it is absolutely fine for what I know about you, test it out. And then if you have different goals, maybe not.
Not that this is the point, but I remember when Heather would make what we all lovingly called Heather balls, which is just basically like nuts and almond butter.
Amazing.
And then after like 2 years of making that, she was like, yeah, I think I have a nut allergy.
Yeah, but for Heather, she's like, I'm going to beat it. Yeah.
Okay.
Don't try to beat your allergies.
Don't try. Yeah, you will not win. This is from David. This is in our recover bucket. In a recent episode, Ben talked about when he started doing Wim Hof breath work. It got him into a meditative state quite quickly. I've been doing the breath work practice myself for the last 2 years consistently, and I found its cumulative effect to benefit me both physically and mentally. Ben mentioned he had moved away from Wim Hof since then and now follows a different practice. I'm wondering why he changed and I'd love to know what his new practice involves and how it differs from Wim Hof. So there's a why, a what, and a how. Why you changed, what you're doing now,
okay.
And why.
So let's do the what I changed to, which was, it is pranayama.
Pranayama.
Okay. Reason I changed was because I got introduced to an incredible pranayama coach and he taught it to me.
In person.
Yep. In real life. Met with him once a week for a couple months. And then how does it differ? Wim Hof is essentially very deep breathing to the point where you get to almost a hyperventilative state.
That's right.
That's not a real word.
We're going with it.
Okay. But you kind of get it. you take these very big, very kind of like almost, it's physically demanding breaths. Exhale, hold for as long as you can. Take a recovery breath in, hold for 15 seconds, let it out, let your thoughts fall back into it. That's one cycle, repeat for 3 to 5 cycles. So awesome because it's so simple, right? That's literally what I just said to you is Wim Hof. That's like, that's it. David. As David said, there's a lot of physiological and mental benefits that come along with that. What I found, and I still do go back to Wim Hof. I usually do it when I'm crunched for time because it's kind of the hack.
It's like the CrossFit version of breath.
He figured it out, right? He's like, all Wim Hof is just pranayama way pared down. Mm. It's let's take the minimal effective dose. So what's the thing that's going to hook people and get people? And it's the breathing part. What pranayama is essentially a bunch of exercises you do leading up to that point. And when you get to that point, even that point is more structured. So it's a very disciplined, structured, systematic approach to engage more than just the Wim Hof thing, which is like belly, chest, head. You're trying to like get your whole body to breathe through this diaphragmatic. You start off with basically abdominal contractions. You've seen like deep divers do this where they suck in their diaphragm and their ribs start to protrude out. You start there. Then you do some pelvic floor movements. Then you do some things with your tongue. Then you do some stuff with your eyes. Then you do some stuff with your neck and head. You use some facial things. Then you do some restrictive nasal breathing where you're breathing through one nose and the other. Then you do some timed out breaths with powerful exhales. You work with Ujjayini breath, which is that Vader breath. Mm-hmm. And then you go into Wim Hof.
Got it.
So it's not that one is different. It's kind of like F45 and CrossFit. Mm-hmm. Not to put it in like, Wim Hof is awesome and is the thing that I still go back to and use to this day. But it's not the only thing I'm using right now. Mm-hmm.
The coaching sessions for those, I'm just super curious. What did that look like? How do you get coached through that? Is it, okay, here's where we're going to start and we're going to do it together. Yep. And then at some point you're like, cool, I got this. I don't need the coach anymore.
Yep. Pretty much exactly right. So, it starts off, it's very, additive. Mm-hmm. So they start off, it's learning math. Yep. So here are some easy addition problems. The next week come back and here's some subtraction. Then let's do some multiplication. Then let's do division. Now we're ready for some fractions and maybe some algorithms or algebra. Mm-hmm. So the way it literally started off was let's just learn how to do that Ujjayini breath.
Mm-hmm.
Once we have that, then we'll do the first warm-up exercise. So it was, I'll see if I can do it. So it's like you're fogging up a mirror, but you're doing it with your mouth closed.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing it both on the inhale and the exhale. Yoga has you do it on the exhale only, really. Traditional yoga, that if you went to like a yoga studio, it's with your mouth open. So that's the right way to learn it, is put your hand in front of your, like your glass, and now do that with your mouth closed.
Mm-hmm.
And what you notice is when people do Wim Hof, if they do it through their mouth, they'll feel their mouth get really dry. Mm-hmm. If they do it through their nose, they'll feel their nose get really cold.
Yeah.
Well, what you realize is you can take in deeper breaths because it puts it in the throat, which then puts in the diaphragm instead of in your nose and then puts it in your lungs. Mm-hmm. So it kind of just like shifts the whole thing down. You're able to take deeper breaths. They're very parasympathetic triggering, meaning like it gets you into that relaxive state very quickly. And it also your nose doesn't get overworked. Now you are breathing through your nose, which is wild. You are taking more air, which is wild, but your nose is relaxed as opposed to that, like, you know, which is like a nose thing. You have snot all dripping down your face.
Right.
So that was lesson one.
Yeah.
Was just that breath. And then can we suck in your belly and activate your diaphragm? Cool. From there. I can't remember what it came after but like, here's your homework.
Got it.
And then step two was like, here's this and the next part of it. And step three, and it's like over so many sessions, you build into it and then you kind of have it.
Cool. All right. Last question we've got is in our connect bucket. And this is from Georgia. I'm a libero. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that libero, and captain on my college volleyball team, and therefore am expected to lead on and off the court. However, I've been told that I come off as quote unquote bossy or a know-it-all when I'm giving constructive criticism. My aim is to positively critique my teammates after multiple mistakes if I see something that could be helpful to them. So my question is, how do I hold my tongue and let them struggle? Or do I hold my tongue and let them struggle or help them out and risk a teammate being irritated by me?
What's a libero?
Libero. As far as I understand it, it's like the...
It's a weird way of pronouncing Libra.
Yeah. I think it's the person on the volleyball team in the match itself who's sort of the captain on the court.
Yeah. I don't know if there's actually a person with like a different color uniform, right?
That's them. Yeah. Yes. That's her.
So she's the captain.
In Georgia's case. Yes. And there probably is some difference between like captain off the court and on the court.
Okay. All right. There's that. I got kind of hung on that. And the question is like, how do I come across as not bossy, but like,
yeah, well, she's,
give my
she's,
teammates feedback. Exactly. She'll coach them.
Does she hold her tongue or does she give the feedback while risking that label being put back on her?
Okay. Great question. And it goes into your ability to be a leader.
Yeah.
Right. And here's the answer is you should not hold your tongue. But the answer is also you should not give feedback that comes across as bossy or being a know-it-all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now here lies the conundrum and the question. How do we go about doing that? It's harder than you want it to be. Leadership is the hardest freaking job, I think, in the world. You're pulling on everyone else's issues. It's your job to make sure that collective group, whether that's you and one other person or you and 25,000 other people, move forward together in a way that could not be done by the individuals themselves pursuing their best.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do that first, I believe that we need to, when we communicate with people, we have to do it. And this is a buzzword. I hate even using it because people are going, oh, but in an empathetic state. And what I mean by that is the saying goes, treat people the way you want to be treated. I think that's a really crappy saying, really crappy. Because if you want the direct in your face feedback, you give that to someone and they go, whatever, bossy, know it all, which is probably what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
The job of the leader is to understand how each person would best receive that feedback. And if you go like, Sarah, what the hell? That's the fourth time in this match you've X, Y, and Z'd. I don't know enough about volleyball to give a specific.
I think X, Y, and Z'd.
Yeah, that's what they do?
Yeah.
Then when they mess up?
I X, so, Y, and Z'd wrong.
Yeah. And Sarah like shivers inside and like inside like glares and wants the Libra, Georgia to like, you know, burst into a ball of flames and die.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's making her look bad in front of the team. Maybe the right thing for Sarah is after the practice, once everyone's left, you just kind of sit next to her on the bench in the locker room and go, you know, what's going on? And Sarah goes, well, what do you mean? You're like, well, you like four times in a row made the same mistake that you know we've been working on, like, what's going on? And Sarah goes like, you know, and now you're in a conversation and you're seeking to understand what's going on instead of like you're doing. So I'm not saying that's the answer, but it's, you need to come at this, not with the goal of, I know how to do this and my job is to communicate the right way.
Mm.
The job is to, said another way, the job is to communicate the right way.
Mm-hmm.
That's the job. And you need to get that across.
Mm-hmm.
You need to make sure that the people that are hearing you are, if it's not excited, they're open and accepting to hear you.
Yeah.
And if this was easy, everyone would be a leader, but it sure as hell is not.
Yep.
You got to figure out how they're best going to receive it.
Yeah. So it's the relationship first, to a degree, understand that person enough to understand then how do I communicate this thing? So it's communicating.
Yeah, and some people are going to want the direct. Like
100%.
That.
Yeah. It's communicating the right thing in the right way to the specific person.
And maybe with a touch of patience, right? Because relationships aren't formed. It's like we're human beings and it takes a long time to earn trust.
All right, we are going to get into our workout in just a minute. But first, a quick word of thanks to our sponsor this week, UCAN. UCAN. I remember years ago, you mentioned UCAN.
Yeah.
And you were like, I don't want to tell anybody about this.
Yeah, that's.
And so it was really cool when they reached out.
That's why I feel even weird about this right now. I still feel like it's a secret sauce.
So quickly, what is UCAN and why was it this? Why was it a secret weapon for you?
The main product, the one that we use the most, is a powdered carbohydrate. And it's not just a carb. It's called superstarch.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool name, but it actually is just that. The background story is a doctor had a son with this rare metabolic disease. They needed to wake him up every couple hours to feed him or he would basically die. It's this weird thing. So this doctor put his life on hold to try to create a solution for this. What he found was this, if you cooked this corn in this certain way, it basically didn't have the effects of spiking your insulin at all, but it would allow you to have sustained energy. Crazy bonkers. It doesn't exist. I'm going to say it again. Like you're fueling yourself with carbohydrates, which your body's primary and it's what it wants to be fueled on, but you don't get any of the negative effects that we associate with carbohydrates.
If you're looking for more energy with less sugar, give UCAN a try. They've got a lineup of products from quick and easy gels to protein powders to energy bars, as Ben mentioned. Head to UCAN.co/excellence and save 20% off your first order with the code excellence. Again, that's the letter UCAN.co/excellence.
And then,
and then don't tell anybody. All right, our workout this week. We are going to unpack something. You and I put something out on CompTrain called the 10 Pillars of Trusting the Process, which is something that you had started or you had kind of put some initial thoughts together. I kind of cleaned them up, just cleaned up the wording a little bit. And we put it out recently. And I thought it was really, really cool. And I personally and selfishly just wanted to like have a conversation with you to unpack, because all I had were like bullet points. I was like, cool, I can clean that. That's easy. But I want to know more about each one of these things. And so I've got in front of me here, I've got the 10 pillars of trusting the process. We're going to go through each one relatively quickly, but we'll get through all 10 of them. And just to kind of unpack what they mean, what and where they fit in this process, process of trusting the process. So the first one is define success. Do you know what you're aiming at? Ensure you have control over that success by tying it to internal benchmarks.
Okay, so let's just back up for a second
before that
first
one. Sense. Yep.
So I shared this with you recently, but this is something I created probably back in 2016. And I use this with my elite athletes.
Cool.
So as a part of their competitive, we called it like the competitor's playbook. Yep. And I would give them a whole bunch of information and worksheets to work through to basically like, here's what I believe it takes to be an elite athlete. Mm-hmm. And this was one of them. Here are our 10 pillars that we need to focus on in terms of trusting the process. Basically, eyes straight ahead, don't get distracted by all the flashy lights and everything else. If you think of it in terms of trying to accomplish great things.
Well, yeah, I think this is appropriate for elite athletes, certainly, but for really anybody.
And that's where that's for sure, right? But if we're trying to accomplish things, so people set goals. What ends up happening is, and we've talked about this before, but everyone focuses on the end state of the goals, which are really sort of outside of your control. Whether you want to run a sub-4-hour marathon, whether you want to get a promotion, whether you want to find the love of your life, right? Like, yes, we can, but those are all like the end state of where those things actually end up aren't really inside of your control. And really what matters is more so is the steps that you need to take in order to achieve those goals. So if those things are for the 4-hour marathon, if it's run 3 times during the week, and one of those being an interval, the other two being moderate 4 to 8 milers. And on the weekend, you're going to do a 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, and so on the long. There's your process, along with I'm going to eat enough to fuel. I'm going to make sure I'm getting my sleep. I'm going to make sure I'm recovering and seeing my chiropractor. And so there's your process. Well, my contention, the whole idea behind the process is, once you state what your goals are, and I'm not saying skip that step, once you can almost shelve them,
yep,
and put them over there. And the more you pay attention to the end goal, you might be getting distracted a little bit. Mm-hmm. Instead, try to continually pull yourself back to the process. And that's what the idea was with my elite athletes, but obviously it worked with anybody pursuing anything that they want to pursue.
Anything that requires obviously a process by which you achieve right. That thing. Okay, so back to what I started with, defining success, ensuring that you have control over that success by tying it to internal benchmarks.
Well, that kind of leads into what, that's kind of like conceptualizes what that idea was. Like, let's figure out what the goal is, but let's also make sure that we have control over it. Now, when you pull this back far enough, you end up kind of like, so people go, okay, so I want to make $1 million. Okay. do you really have control over that? Like if you work your ass off and do all the right things, the universe still might not reward you. You might not get. So what ends up happening is, and I'm not saying this is the right or wrong thing, as you pull back and make this really controllable, the actual thing goes away and it actually falls you back into the process again. And when you get far enough into it again, it's no longer actually about the actionables of the process because you might not have control over that. If it's running the 4-hour marathon, maybe you get hit by a car and you can't run for 3 months. Well, okay, then it becomes about your character and what is the approach and the attitude you're going to take towards the process every single day. And that's what, if we can get that level of success down towards that level, well, then you can chase it no matter what's happening around you. You still own that pursuit. So let's use that marathon. The ultimate goal is success is a sub-4-hour marathon. The process to do that is those weekly runs and the long ones, the sleep, the recovery, the nutrition, all of that. But what I really want to do, the way I'm going to define myself, is the ability to look in the mirror every single morning saying, I am doing everything I can to accomplish my goals. That, like, yeah, okay, now we're not being distracted. And even if you get hit by the car, you just have to shift the process a little bit. But
you can still move towards
it. Yes, exactly right. It's totally inside your control. Love
that. Okay. Second one is be responsible. Are you responding or reacting? No one and nothing can make you upset without your consent.
Okay. So this is like working with my elite athletes. It's always like, it's not the coach's job. It's certainly not the judge is going to influence you. It's not what the CrossFit puts out for the workouts. It's you. Like it's up to you. Like Tom Brady didn't come Tom Brady because he was a part of the Patriots. He became Tom Brady because he freaking was Tom Brady. Like he took total ownership of that. The people that are like understanding that this is on me. Now being a part of a great system and having a great coach are bonuses, but I'm going to do everything I can. I'm not going to look for anyone else to make this happen. And I'm not going to use anything else as an excuse. This thing is on me. And whatever comes along the way that knocks me off course, I'm not going to react. Think of the negative words that get associated with that, overreacting. I'm going to respond. Think of the positive words that, responsible. Like this is the whole, I'm going to take ownership and be responsible for everything that happens along this journey. Whether I get rewarded, recognized along the way, or the opposite. People try to knock me down or derail me. Nothing that anything does externally can affect me internally.
Number three is come ready. Do you accept the challenges that are coming? Visualize yourself giving total effort throughout no matter what.
What most people do when they learn about visualization is visualize perfection, visualize the perfect thing, visualize yourself in the corner office, making $1 million, running the business, being the CEO. But what they don't visualize is the actual struggles along the way to get there. And that's what we want to be ready for. If it's all smooth sailing, guess what? You're going to be just fine. It's when you go up against it and you're trying to be that CEO and you're managing this small sales team and no one is meeting their quotas and no one is bought in and no one's listening to you. How are you going to work through that? That's a challenge. And that's what we want to be ready for, is not the blue skies and the smooth waves, but when it gets stormy. Are we ready to handle that? If you're going to sail around the world, no one has to prepare for the beautiful days. You got to prepare for the storm and what's going to happen when you face that in real time.
Number four is be present. Are you where your feet are? Fine tune the mundane routines of the day to maximize your minutes better.
So this goes a little bit to like people get so caught up into what their goals actually are that they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so far from it. And the stress, anxiety, doubt, depression, all these things seep in, or they're so tied to their past. Like I've never done anything. I've never actually accomplished this. When I've set my goals before, I've always fallen off. Like I'm a loser. I'm going to be fat for the rest of my life, whatever it might be. You got to, those are always going to be there. So I'm not saying like we're always going to live in this little tiny moment bubble of like this 1 second. They're always going to be there. What we're trying to do is not get distracted by them. Mm-hmm. Is when you feel yourself drifting that way, pull yourself back into this moment, because it's really the only moment that you can influence. Anything that's happened in the past, I get like, yes, I know you didn't want your car to break down on the highway. I know you didn't want that to happen. Okay, you sitting there continuing to be pissed about it is not moving us forward at all. We got to recognize all these small little things. It's easy to recognize that in the big one, right? Mm-hmm. Your car breaks down the side of the highway and the level of stress rises. But this happens all the time. All the time. When you come into the gym and the class is going on and you're not in the spot that you normally go to.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And you feel like you got to let that go. You got to let all these tiny little things go so you can continue to give your very best. Here's a weird one today. I was warming up in the class, taking the 7:30 class at CFNE. And as I'm going through like a power clean progression, the member in front of me farts. And that was distracting. And I was like, oh my God, like right away, my brain went like away from where I was to like, it went to all these different thought processes of like, should I say something? What if that was me? Is it going to smell bad? Yeah. Like all this. And I wasn't focused on, it's a small, if you want to, remember this follow the process. I wrote this for people that are trying to be the singular best in the world. Those little tiny little things pull you away. You're being pulled away. You can't give everything. So what I used to do with these athletes, you would know this, is during their workouts, I would purposely give them distracting things so that the challenge would be really obvious. I would just, while they were doing overhead squats, I would just kind of, you know, touch the back of their head a little bit with a band, just so like, I don't like this, but like, okay, you can't control it. Pull yourself back in.
It's a slight tangent, but I feel like I've heard you say recently that mental toughness is effectively, like if we really had to simplify it, it's the ability to stay focused on what you need to be focused on.
That's what it is.
And that everything, like there's a lot, it's a mile deep, but like really if that is a sentence, it was that.
Yeah. So, you know, I like Tyson's definition of discipline. It's doing things you don't want to do like you love them. Yep. Well, mental toughness is closer to that than it is to withstanding pain and discomfort. Mm-hmm. Pain, discomfort is a physical thing. That's toughness. Patrick Mahomes sprains his ankle in the game and doesn't miss a play. That's the physical toughness. The mental part is like, it's now the fourth quarter. Pressure goes up. Can you stay focused on what you need to do?
Love that. Number five, stay consistent. Is this your maximum sustainable pace? Aim for total effort over the long haul.
Yeah. So people kind of like confound this where they give maximal effort and they actually overshoot it. Yep. Or they're, you know, so first off, this is another word to say what you just said is threshold, yep. Right? We have to find your threshold over the long haul. Yep. That's your threshold, not only today, but your threshold this week, this month, this year, your career and your life. So
I love the idea of maximum sustainable pace, but taking it out of the gym.
Yes, it's that. So like what is for your, is it for your work? Mm-hmm. Is it for your family? Like it's so tempting for me to go like, forget work. I'm just going to go and hang with my family. And I want to be at my kids, every single thing. But that's not the sustainable approach to this. Right. Then we have financial issues.
Right. Somewhere down the line, there'll be another issue.
And I haven't even shown my kids how to like be a provider and a protector. Like it's like there's this thing, this balance across this. And we have to recognize is where is the maximal pursuit inside of that balance? So if you think of it in terms of like a dual visualization. The first one is you have a Frisbee on a pencil, right? And the balance is like, we have all these different things, the five factors, right? But you could also put like the dedication to dedication to the process. You want to make sure that that's somewhat balanced, but it's also not just there. It's more like that. It's not on a pencil. It's on a fireman pole. And that plate can slide up and down. Mm. And the goal is to keep it balanced at the top of that. because you could keep it balanced, but not be putting much effort into any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal isn't balance. The goal is balance with maximal effort and efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Number six is stop comparing. Are your eyes on your own paper? Giving full effort means that there will be no reason to compare.
So twofold this, that last part is like, if you're truly giving your very, very best, those two things, the balance mm-hmm. and you're giving the full maximal effort, like what else is there? Like what does what it matter?
Yeah.
Like you're comparing your journey to someone else. They're on a different journey. But this is another one that I came across and I wish I could give credit to this because I can't remember where I heard it. And if it comes to me, I will say it. Because I think it's so, it might be Jordan Peterson.
Okay.
Which is when we compare, we don't compare the totality of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We compare one small little aspect. And when we do that, we don't compare to the average person. We compare to somebody always that's slightly ahead of us in that endeavor.
Yep.
And that's what eats us up. So somebody that's a little bit fitter than us, we compare our fitness to their fitness. We don't compare our fitness to
the guy who just started.
The hundreds of thousands, not millions of people that we're way, way ahead of. And we're not comparing the balance of our lives
mm-hmm.
to that person. We're picking the one thing that they're better than us at, right? So me as an author, I don't compare myself to like Tom Clancy, mm-hmm. like that's ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
or Stephen Covey or anybody. I pick somebody that's like in our space, that's a little bit better mm-hmm. than me, and I compare like books.
Yep.
I don't compare books and coaching and yep. family yep.
And whether they're happy.
Happiness, yeah. Exactly right.
Yep.
It's so, and this is how the default method of our comparison. It's unfair to ourselves. We need to pull away from that. Comparison is the thief of all joy. If we want to enjoy the process, which is what this is about,
yep.
if we want to have that longer road, we got to resist that temptation.
Number seven is keep perspective. Can you zoom out? Remember that this too shall pass. So learn everything from this and let it go.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked a lot about this in the past 6 months aspect of this, but perspective is so, so big. First is like, if it's not going to matter in 5 years, don't give it 5 minutes right now. I'd love to do a whole episode on perspective, mark that down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the idea behind this is, if you want sustainability, you have to recognize that this second thing right here is not the most crucial thing. As an elite athlete, that will eat you up in training
yeah.
is what ends up happening. You think that this workout is the most important. So you're gonna overdo it and blow yourself up. You have to recognize that it's all part of a bigger journey.
Mm-hmm. Number eight is go pro. Are you giving what you've got? Amateurs are the only ones who regret the might have beens and maybes.
Yeah. So it's funny, like, that's my definition of pro, right? And actually, yep. I got that saying from Stephen Pressfield. Yep. He wrote a book called Go Pro,
which is so good.
It's so good, yep. right? It's this idea of the difference between the way that the amateur approaches things versus the way a pro approaches things. And as I'm writing this for professional athletes, it's really important that they don't continue to have an amateur's mindset and approach to all of the facets of their lives. They need that mentality of becoming a pro.
Number nine is respect time. Are you treating this like a dress rehearsal? Every part of this ride deserves our full attention and effort.
It's kind of the same type of thing, but just in a different perspective of maximizing minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is one of the words that we've used, and one of the taglines we've used a lot with our athletes. And I think for chasing excellence, it's a huge aspect of that, right? And I've learned a lot from my wife, Heather, in terms of what this means. She's so ultimately aware of how important every minute is with our kids. I think that we have we're lucky to have the dynamic we have, yeah. which is we have two older yeah. kids in college and we have two kids in elementary school.
So you
we have
you
two
know.
Kids in their 20s and two kids that are under 10.
Yeah.
So we know how fast that goes, yeah. but it's not just about you with your kids. It's everything, right? We're not going to get another chance. Me and you will never, ever, ever get another chance to have this conversation right here.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only time we're ever going to have it. So if we're going to be distracted by other thoughts while we're having this conversation, we're not maximizing this. And if there's a thing about like the pursuit of chasing an excellent life, this is as big a part of it as almost anything. Mm-hmm. Is what is the most valuable use of my time right now? If you always have that, it's kind of like if I'm working with an athlete, one of the biggest things I want them to do is always when they're competing or doing a training session workout, a Metcon, is ask yourself constantly, is this the maximal sustainable pace? Is the fastest I can go without having to slow down later? Well, it's like, if that's the case, then like you're nailing it right now. It's the same thing. We should always be having a similar question, not that question, but a similar question, which is this the very best use of my time right now? That little question, which goes to like right now, leads into like, well, this moment, right? This, should we be doing this podcast? Should we be having this conversation? Then it goes to like, should we be doing podcasts? Mm-hmm. Should we have a public forum? Should I be in this ecosystem? Is this fulfilling me? Should I be actually fishing with a spear in Hawaii and living in a hut that I made myself? Or should I be trying to, you know, own an F1 racing team? It's like when you start off with that little minutia question, it lends to this bigger thing of like, well, if maximizing this minute, the first thing I have to ask is like, what's the big pursuit? You don't know if you're maximizing this minute unless you know what this minute is a part
building
of.
Towards.
Building towards. Yeah. Exactly right.
Cool. Last one is feed curiosity. Do you settle or do you search? There is always more to learn and we never have all the answers.
Yeah. For an athlete's perspective, it's not about passing the test, right? It's not about like, okay, you can do a sub-3 minute Fran, you're fit, like check the box. It's about that constant pursuit of betterment. And we used to use the word humble a lot. Mm-hmm. But I've kind of reframed my thinking on that because I think that you can be humble without being curious, yeah. But you can't be curious without being humble.
I think that's right.
I think curiosity is one of the real understanding. I have so many built-in biases, mm-hmm. So much built-in programming that's running this software that I call Ben, that if I don't step back and ask questions about why do I have those assumptions? Why do I have those beliefs? Why do I have these habits? Why do I react these certain ways? We're limiting ourselves to the way that we could potentially be experiencing this life.
Love that. Cool. That was the 10 pillars of trusting the process. You want to do a quick recap about all of that? Or feel like that was a lot of talking right there.
You can run through all 10.
Cool. Want me to do a quick recap of them?
Yeah.
Cool. Define success, be responsible, come ready, be present, stay consistent, stop comparing, keep perspective, go pro, respect time, and feed curiosity. I love those. Those remind me of the Five Factors posters we did like 100 years ago. Cool. We're going to get to our shout out and our cool down in just a minute. But first, quick word of thanks to one of our sponsors this week. Element, L-M-N-T, is an electrolyte mix with everything you need and none of the junk. I remember Element first came to us when Rob Wolf joined us for an episode 2021. And they were kind enough to send some Element to us. And it was like, oh, this is.
Yeah, there's a few things that have popped up that have like you come across my desk. And it's like, Element is basically salt.
Yep.
So salt tabs. So like everyone uses these other types of salt tabs. And I used to be a triathlete, so I used to use. And what you realize is there's really not a lot of salt in them. Mm-hmm. So there's three. There's salt, magnesium, and potassium. Those are the three really active electrolytes that would be in any drink. When you look at something like the traditional sport drinks, not to name anything that would like be like an alligator, but there's very, very little electrolytes. It's a carb drink. It works because it fuels you from a carbohydrate perspective. It does not do said another way, sugar. Mm-hmm. What it does not do is do the electrolyte thing, which is what Element does such a phenomenal job of. So our kids do it. I'm drinking it right now.
Like, as am I.
I drink it like 1 to 2 packets a day, every day.
Cool. Right now you can get yourself a free sample pack with any purchase. That's 8 single serving packs for free with any Element order. Great way to taste all 8 flavors before you find what's your favorite.
Look at that.
Nice. Jinx. Citrus.
Raspberry salt. Lemonade.
Nice. Okay, cool.
Or raspberry?
Raspberry salt, I think is
just raspberry salt.
Yeah. Cool. Head to drinkelement.com/excellence to get the deal. drinkelement.com/excellence. All right. Our shout out is when we take just a moment to read a comment, a review, a note that you or I have received as a way to say thank you to folks who do send us these notes. This is from Rebecca. She says, I don't think I could have gotten through the last year and a half without your wisdom. You've taught me to control only what I have control over. Although my husband's stroke was the scariest moment of my life, I, like Cole Sager, had the mental and emotional tools that made me feel like I would rather this happen to me because I could deal with it. Despite so many unknowns, I controlled only what I could control, keeping my daughter safe, sleeping, calling the hospital, staying calm, and making conscious choices on how to react. You taught me these things, and I just want to say thank you.
Holy smokes.
So thank you to Rebecca.
Yes. Okay. That's it.
Yep, that's it.
That's it.
That's it. Cool down. We'll wrap this up relatively quickly because we're a little long today, but our cool down, I got a note, as I often do, and this is from, his name's Brian, and he and I, we've exchanged notes before. I think he's gotten a question or two into the various shows, but he was responding to a conversation you and I had about, how when, especially now you with like at soccer tournaments and et cetera, you're seeing a lot of parents kind of just give kids kind of just whatever food in between events and whatever. So he wrote in, he said, I love your podcast, but it kills me when you guys harp on how bad processed foods are for kids. I know my situation is an extreme outlier with my daughter at 9 being hospitalized with anorexia, but I would never wish that hell on anyone. The cause of anorexia is not easily known, but environment plays a key. Just please be careful on how much we stress with kids and teens on eating processed food that it is so awful. And I followed up. I said, listen, Brian, I'd love to talk about this on a show, but can you give me a little bit more context? Because I don't want to assume I know exactly where you're coming from. So he wrote back. He said, for context, my daughter is now 10 and went from a low of 50 pounds in January 22 to around 100 pounds now. She does travel softball, field hockey, and swim. When she doesn't, when she wasn't well, she would only eat grilled chicken and broccoli. Now, when we go to these travel tournaments, we feed her pretty much quote unquote unhealthy foods. We put a ton of heavy whipping cream in her food to add calories. I just found the word sad, quote unquote sad, aggravating, but I should not be so sensitive. I get that my situation and family are an extreme. You guys can't cater to all and are speaking in generalities. It's just close to my heart and I'm trying to be less sensitive on it. I learned a ton in the past year and the diet culture for some can trigger eating disorders. So as fathers, I think we can respect and understand this, but I wanted to give us a chance to just respond to it.
Yeah. First off, like all the sympathies, Brian, I've had, athletes that I've worked with that have had eating disorders of varying types, and I've seen how devastating they are to people. So I can't imagine dealing that with my own daughter, let alone a 10-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
So when we are giving nutritional advice, whether it's for adults or kids, the principles remain the same, but they're just that, they're principles. Yeah. And principles don't always address outliers. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're principles and they're not necessarily prescriptions. It's not saying everyone should do this thing. So if you find as you get away from processed foods that a kid, a teenager, or an adult or anyone is not eating and becoming malnutritioned, that's an issue. That requires serious interventions. The principle of whole foods over processed foods, though, doesn't change because of an outlier. Mm-hmm. It is still that, and I still want to see less processed foods at halftime for my kids' soccer games. What that means is because Brian's daughter has this horrific challenge in front of her, doesn't mean that we should be feeding kids the foods that they like, gummy bears and Chex Mix and the goldfish and everything else that's at the soccer games. If If that wasn't present, would they be eating other things? I don't know the answer to that, but that's where it becomes from a wide spectrum suggestion down to the nuances of individualization.
Yeah. The thing I think about is, I think it's really important to remember, recognize, because we live in this culture of like, it's really easy to get advice. It's really easy to find people whose advice are like, that makes sense to me. Like that's the direction I'm going to go. And it's so easy to forget that what we talked about before about comparing and all the others, that everybody's context is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I realized really quickly when I had kids and when my life, you know, as it does, fundamentally changed, I had to be really careful about the kind of advice I was listening to from people who don't have kids, because it's just a mm-hmm. different ballgame. And not to say that the advice isn't
good. And they don't
good.
Have your kids.
100%.
So it's like, even if they have kids, don't know your specific circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. And the challenge is still like hearing the advice, understanding as best you can what the principles are at play, but giving yourself some grace if like, that can't be me. Like that's not me. That doesn't make sense for me. So I'm not going to beat myself up if I can't follow that to the prescription that individual who, again, you can respect him, you can listen to him, you try to understand where they're coming from, but you've got to always come back to what makes sense for me and what can I take from this? Not, well, now I'm angry because that person's telling me something I can't do and screw that guy. But instead saying, okay, where's the truth in that? Where's the truth in that as it relates to my situation, as it relates to my life? And can I take a nugget of good out of that and turn it into something mm-hmm. versus, again, feeling like a failure because like, well, I can't do that anymore. I can't, like, that's not within my realm of possibility now.
Yeah.
I just think that that's important to, because we're all getting advice from various people, podcasts, books, whatever. Just to recognize that like context matters so much. Yeah. Cool. All right, Brian, we wish you nothing but the best. Thank you everybody out there for listening. Thank you for your ratings and your reviews. If this episode resonated with you and you've got a friend who you feel like would like it, please do consider sharing it with them. That helps new folks find the show. And Ben and I appreciate it. We'll be back next week for another episode of Chasing Excellence.